Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating over 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
No apologies from Goldman Sachs. Those controversial employee bonuses, the windfall it made on the AIG bailout, the betting it was doing against the very same securities it was selling, all just part of doing business, according to an open letter from Goldman's top executives, which raises the question, just what is the business of Wall Street these days? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Citrix, offering GoToMyPC, providing remote access to a Mac or a PC from anywhere. More at gotomypc.com/market. And by Monsanto, committed to sustainable agriculture and creating hybrid and biotech seeds designed to increase crop yields and conserve natural resources. More at producemoreconservemore.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Ryssdal. Glad you're here on this Wednesday, the 7th of April. Fellow shareholders. That was the start of today's 8-page letter from the heads of the Wall Street bank Goldman Sachs, a letter that mentioned the word client more than 50 times. Goldman's motives were clear after a year of public outrage over the firm's huge profits in the wake of the financial crisis. It wanted to assure shareholders that it's been acting in the best business interest of its clients. It is, after all, an investment bank. But as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports from New York, the vast majority of Goldman's business these days is trading for itself.
If you don't want to read the entire 8-page Goldman Sachs letter, just know that the message to clients is basically the same as this 1991 Bryan Adams hit. Everything I do it for you. But wait a minute. Goldman Sachs made 76% of its revenue last year from the investments in its own accounts. So how can that be good for clients? Well, today's letter said, quote, in these cases, we are executing transactions in connection with our role of providing liquidity to markets.
Well, there's a certain amount of truth to that. I mean, they are an intermediary and they do help firms issue shares and debt. That's what they're supposed to do. They're a utility in that respect.
That's Cornelius Hurley, who directs the Moran Center on Banking at Boston University. He says what's puzzling is that they're patting themselves on the back for providing liquidity to the markets.
They don't admit in the letter that every day they open their doors for business, they receive a government subsidy in the form of a lower borrowing cost because you and I and other taxpayers stand ready to bail the firm out, and creditors know that.
In other words, their liquidity is just Washington's liquidity repackaged. Chester Spratt is a professor of finance at Carnegie Mellon. He says Goldman's penchant to trade for itself is the new normal for investment banks.
Many firms are in the business of being basically dealers. And inherently, what a dealer does is the dealer takes the opposite side of what the customer wants.
And Spratt says you can't blame Goldman for ending up on the winning side of many of those trades, even if they have to mention clients 56 times in their shareholder letter to make up for it. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Whether this is good news or bad news very much depends on your perspective, but fresh numbers show apartment rents are starting to edge back up again after taking a big dive during the recession. Don't be mistaken, though, even with the housing crisis turning millions of homeowners into renters, it's still very much a renter's market out there. Vacancy rates remain at a 30-year high. That's a lot of empty apartments and an opportunity. Trulia.com, one of the top search websites for home buyers, is moving into the rental business. Trulia joins a growing crowd of online real estate sites going after the rental market. From the entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman took the new rental tool for a spin.
Let's go ahead and type in Portland, Oregon into the search box.
Okay, and I haven't given any preferences yet, bed, baths, whatever.
No, I'll let you do that on the next page.
Trulia VP Heather Fernandez is helping me find an apartment in Portland's Tony Pearl District. It's all condos and lofts and nothing much decent under $1,500 a month. I can zoom in on street views, check out floor plans, screen out places that won't take my cat.
And with one click, you go ahead, contact that property manager.
Trulia sells ads on the site rather than charging renters or property owners. That and the richness of the data is key to driving traffic, says Hessam Naji at real estate investment firm Marcus & Millichap.
The science of marketing apartments has really evolved. They put the renter in the driver's seat of being able to look at a variety of options very quickly, you know, secure their preferences from the standpoint of location and amenities.
San Francisco-based Trulia has made a name for itself in the home search market, but it's entered a crowded field for rentals, including Zillow and Apartments.com, along with startups like MyNewPlace.com. Najee thinks there's plenty of business to go around.
Today's renter community is a lot more professional adults and renters by choice. So the makeup of the rental market today is far more sophisticated than it ever has been.
And Trulia invites users to rate buildings and neighborhoods to help others pick their new places. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Now that we've assessed the rental market, it may be time to reassess home valuations. That's one way for struggling homeowners to pinch some pennies. Turns out many homeowners are paying property tax like they're still in the bubble. So they're appealing to get their property values reassessed to more realistic levels, given slumping home values. And that's got local governments scrambling. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith has more.
Home prices have dropped an average of 30% since their peak 3 years ago. But many counties and cities only assess property values every few years. That means lots of people are paying property taxes like it's 2007. So they've started appealing their home values. Anthony Serro owns a business that specializes in property tax appeals, and business is booming.
Well, at least doubled, maybe tripled.
Serro says he's typically able to get a 20% adjustment on a property, but now he has to fight a lot harder than he did a decade ago.
If you presented a halfway decent case, you didn't really get much of a pushback. But now they are fighting tooth and nail for every case.
They are cities, counties, and schools. Local governments get roughly half of their revenue from property taxes, and they're doing whatever they can to make up for losses, says Pete Sepp with the National Taxpayers Union.
They have to respond almost immediately by raising rates or trimming back on relief programs.
Sasha Henry is a homeowner in Olympia, Washington. During the housing bubble, the value of her house went up about $50,000 a year, and her property taxes kept climbing, too.
We got to the point where we were just afraid to open our envelope with the yearly property assessment.
But this year, Henry got a break. Her home was assessed at $25,000 less.
We were so excited. We just went, woohoo!
It was a short celebration. The county raised her property tax rate, so Henry says she's saving about $6 a year. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Wall Street got some disappointing news on consumer borrowing today. We'll have that story in a moment and all the fallout when we do the numbers. These are puzzling times for U.S. retailers. On the one hand, a Spending Pulse survey from MasterCard out today finds American consumers are willing to spend more than they were a year ago. Luxury items and online sales both jumped by double digits in March. But we're sending mixed signals. Apparently, we're dipping into our savings because the Federal Reserve's latest reading on consumer borrowing is down. That's mostly because of weakness in credit cards and car loans, and that could dampen hopes for a rise in consumer spending. What's a retailer to do? On the line with us now is Sharif Mityas. He's a retail specialist at the management consulting firm A.T. Kearney. Welcome.
Glad to be with you.
Isn't this a bit tricky? How much can retailers trust in an actual consumer spending turnaround as opposed to this being just consumers indulging in a little pent-up demand here?
Well, I do think there is some pent-up demand, Bob. The weather started to turn nice. Folks have started to come out and buy. But is it really an uptick? And we believe it's time to be cautiously optimistic.
How can retailers position themselves to jump in on what could be a turnaround in consumer spending? Maybe not.
They need to really rationalize what they call the assortment. So take someone in an apparel retailer, an Abercrombie or an American Eagle. When they think about their next new T-shirt and they have to plan for that, the ability for them to hold back some of that inventory and really redirect it to the stores that are selling it versus blowing it all out and taking markdowns in the later parts of the season. Retailers that are able to handle that type of inventory control and able to hold back some of the season's fashions will do better going forward.
But it varies from sector to sector, right? I mean, there's a lot of difference between Walmart and Saks.
Absolutely. And I think what you're going to start to see is actually a continuation of the higher-end luxury retailers starting to really do much better, and some of the lower-end retailers also continuing to hold on to some of those value-conscious consumers, folks stuck in the middle, department stores, some of your mid-range retailers, they'll still continue to, you know, need to weather the storm.
What's the risk that once consumers scratch this itch, if you will, they could turn around and become cautious again and leave retailers in the lurch? What happens if these retailers jump the gun?
Well, I think that what retailers have learned, if nothing else, is not to jump the gun too quickly. You know, many of them are still holding back on inventories. They're still being very cautious in terms of investments in new technologies and new stores. And so I think they're all taking baby steps forward in this recovery, because the worst thing they could do is become over-exuberant and cost themselves markdown dollars in the future.
Well, on the other hand, the flip side of that, what happens if they wait too long?
The issue is if you wait too long, yes, you lose some consumers, you lose some revenue. But the negative side of going too quickly is far worse, as they realized going into the recession.
So what's your best guess here? We've been hearing for over a year now about this new frugality with the American consumer. Have we turned the corner, and was that really so much pie in the sky?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, the issue about the American consumer is we all have very short memories. And, you know, the times of, oh, we have to save, we have to become more thrifty, seems like the last generation almost in terms of consumers' memories. And so I do think you're going to start to see consumers spend more. I do believe, though, there's still this underlying unemployment issue. And until we work ourselves down from the 9-10% level, you're going to continue to see a cautious improvement, but there is going to be a steady improvement going forward.
Sharif Midyas is a retail specialist for A.T. Kearney, a global management consulting firm. Thanks for your insights.
Thank you, Bob. Take care.
Politicians in France are weighing a tough new law to require a free disposable ashtray be provided along with every pack of cigarettes sold. It's been 2 years now since France banned smoking in many public places. Despite that, and steep taxes on cigarettes, though, the French are puffing not less, but more. In fact, the number of smokers in France was up by 2.7% last year. Reporter John Lawrenson has the story from a place that might be more appropriately nicknamed the City of Lighters.
Walk along the Boulevard Saint-Michel and most other streets in central Paris, and you'll see every few dozen meters or so a group of often rather happily chatting people shivering in the cold, smoking. The price of cigarettes has doubled over the past few years. The public has been bombarded with anti-smoking propaganda, and smoking is banned everywhere from nightclubs to offices to train stations. But many French people just don't want to give up.
And it's relaxing to smoke with friends and to speak about what we just, like, failed at school. And
you have quite a good time when you're with people and chatting and everything.
Many smokers say that some anti-smoking measures have actually given them more incentive to smoke, such as giving employees the choice between sitting at their desk working and having a chat and a smoke outside with a couple of colleagues. And though it's difficult for non-smokers to work out how filling your lungs with poisonous smoke could be pleasurable, inside her shop with its distinctive glowing red cigar sign, this tobacconist says that that is how many of her customers feel.
It's one of the few pleasures left. That's how many smokers feel, especially the elderly ones. Others don't want to stop smoking because it helps them enjoy themselves at parties or because it's good to take a break from work from time to time. You know, these people just don't want to stop. It's as simple as that.
More worrying still for French health campaigners is that sales of nicotine substitutes, patches, chewing gums, inhalers and what have you, have slumped to their lowest level since 2001, as this chemist Brigitte Muller confirmed.
There's less interest in these substitutes and less desire to quit. People need something special to happen in their lives, such as the birth of a child or a health problem to get them motivated.
None of which augurs well for the government's new and upcoming attempt to get people to quit. Shocking pictures of smoking-related disease on cigarette packets. Still puffing away on the pavement, this young smoker said that wouldn't work either.
At the beginning, it might have had an effect, but now it's just, we just got used to it. So I think it will be the same with the images.
In Paris, I'm John Lawrenson for Marketplace.
Coming up, demand for platinum starts to soar.
I wasn't aware that there was a market where they were actually stealing catalytic converters out of cars.
But first, let's do the numbers. Stocks slumped today, partly on concerns from Fed Chief Ben Bernanke that the housing market showed few signs of what he called sustained recovery. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 72 points, or 2/3%, to close at 10,897. The Nasdaq shed 5 points, about 0.25%, to finish at 2431. The S&P 500 stepped back 6 points, more than 0.5%, to end at 1182. Investors penned a positive response to that Goldman Sachs shareholder letter we began with. Goldman stock rose 2%. The price of oil took a dive today after 6 days of steady increases. Crude futures tumbled after a bigger-than-expected inventory report in the U.S. Shares of ExxonMobil leaked 0.8%. Chevron trickled down 0.2%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by T. Rowe Price, understanding the connections of a complex global economy. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence at TRoePrice.com. By Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing, online surveys, and event marketing. ConstantContact.com. And by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. What does setting interest rates have in common with driving a car? Visit the Marketplace whiteboard to find out. Our videos demystify finance and economics. Just go to our website, marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at what's coming up Thursday. Chain stores report sales figures for March. The Smile Conference continues in Washington. It addresses social media in law enforcement. Tomorrow's agenda concludes with a town hall meeting. And the Masters opens in Augusta, Georgia. The big news for the golf tournament this year? 3D broadcast. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Rizdal. Just a week ahead of Tax Day comes a startling projection from a research group in the nation's capital. The Tax Policy Center figures that almost half of all Americans, 47%, will be paying no federal income tax at all for the past year. That doesn't include payroll taxes that fund Social Security and Medicare, which are collected and directed to a separate fund. Even though most Americans are putting money into Social Security, those taxes are falling short of what's needed to break even. And that is an issue that concerns commentator Robert Reich.
This is the year Social Security will pay out more in benefits than it receives in payroll taxes. This tipping point came sooner than anyone expected because the recession has kicked so many people off payrolls. But it was coming anyway, and it adds new urgency to reforming Social Security, a task the President's Commission on the Nation's Debt is focusing on. No one should be surprised if the commission suggests raising the retirement age a bit, reducing benefits to retirees with more wealth, maybe increasing the amount of income subject to Social Security taxes. But another group of policymakers, far removed from Social Security, is now focusing its efforts on an issue that's likely to have a bigger impact on Social Security than any of these changes, and that issue is immigration. You see, the biggest reason Social Security is in trouble, and Medicare as well, is because America is aging so fast. The baby boom generation is retiring. Seniors are living longer. And families are having fewer children. Add it all up, and the number of people who are working relative to the number who are retired keeps shrinking. 30 years ago, there were 5 workers for every retiree. Now, there are 3. Within a couple of decades, there will be only 2 workers per retiree. There's no way just 2 workers will be able or willing to pay enough payroll taxes to keep benefits flowing to every retiree. And this is where immigration comes in. Most immigrants are young because the impoverished countries they come from are demographically the opposite of rich countries. Rather than aging populations, their populations are bursting with young people. Once the American economy recovers, most new immigrants to the U.S. will be working for many decades. Get it? One logical way to deal with the crisis of funding Social Security and Medicare is to have more workers per retiree. And the simplest way to do that is to allow more immigrants into the United States.
Former Clinton Labor Secretary Robert Reich is a professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Your thoughts? They're always welcome at marketplace.org. Just when you thought the skies couldn't get any more unfriendly for airline passengers, well, they could. We told you here yesterday that Spirit Airlines will soon tack on a charge for carry-on luggage. Today, the Irish-based budget carrier Ryanair confirmed it's pressing ahead with plans for a fee that might be difficult to opt out of. Get ready for coin slots on the door of the only bathroom within 36,000 feet. Oh, the humanity. As Marketplace's Brett Neely reports, the airline wants passengers to skip the loo.
Right now, Ryanair's planes have three toilets on board, already low by industry standards. But the airline has never been afraid to set its sights lower and its profits higher.
If we get rid of two toilets off the aircraft, we can put in an extra six seats and thereby increase the number of passengers and reduce the overheads cost per passenger, which will ultimately lead to lower fares.
Ryanair spokesman Stephen McNamara said the policy would apply to flights lasting 1 hour or less.
We will make announcements that we would be delighted if people could go to the toilet before they get onto the aircraft.
A spokesman for the European Aviation Safety Agency said, in principle, Ryanair has the right to do this. Regulators here said the same. But U.S. airlines are required to provide, quote, adequate service. The issue of toilets has never come up, but now it could. Ryanair's restroom fee of $1.50 won't scare off passengers, says David Learmont of FlightGlobal.com in London.
People have no illusions about what they're going to get when they get onto a Ryanair airplane nowadays.
A few years ago, the airline even tried charging extra for passengers in wheelchairs. That didn't fly with European disability laws. But in general, Learmont says what Ryanair is doing is inevitable.
There used to be public toilets all over the place and in railway stations and God knows what else in the country. And now there are hardly any of them. But that was from a more benevolent era.
Ryanair says if it goes through with the plan, passengers will have to start bringing change on board within the next year and a half. I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
We've watched gold become an alluring commodity in these hard times. Investors looking for a secure place to grow their money have pushed prices to over $1,000 an ounce. But to borrow a phrase, all that glitters is not gold. Another precious metal has been gaining attention, platinum. A new fund makes it possible for investors to buy and sell an interest in platinum just like they would shares of stock. And platinum prices, too, are soaring. Sally Herships takes a look.
Mitchell Zalman is a mechanic in Brooklyn. About a year ago, he got a call from a customer who thought there was a problem with his Honda. It was making this really loud noise.
I expect to see a hole in the muffler or a pipe that broke off.
Instead, when he gets the car up on the hydraulic lift,
I see a big gaping space.
It wasn't a problem with the muffler. The catalytic converter had been stolen. That's the part that cleans the car's exhaust.
I wasn't aware that there was a market where they were actually stealing catalytic converters out of cars.
But there is. Zellman's had six other customers who've also had their catalytic converters stolen. Turns out converters contain precious metals, like platinum. And platinum is worth a lot right now.
Platinum is a little over $1,600 right now.
That's per ounce. Jeffrey Christian is managing director at CPM, a commodities research group. Christian is married, and I'm telling you this because he's wearing a wedding ring, which is not made of platinum.
I have a gold wedding ring.
So how much metal would be in a ring like your wedding ring?
Oh, a wedding ring like mine might have maybe less than a tenth of an ounce.
Jewelers like that platinum doesn't tarnish, and car makers like that it turns exhaust into carbon monoxide and water. So they're the biggest chunk of the market. 60% of platinum is used for catalytic converters.
then when you start talking about producing 60 or 70 million cars per year on a global basis, it adds up.
Christian says the auto industry is expanding, and that means higher prices. But it's not just demand that can make platinum prices go up. It's supply, too. I stopped by New York City's Commodities Exchange and talked with board member George Jarrow.
Platinum comes from China. Platinum comes from Russia. Platinum comes from South Africa.
But let's stop for a minute and focus on one of the world's biggest suppliers, Russia.
Where sometimes when platinum seems to fall off in price, the export from Russia slows up.
In other words, when Russia is unhappy with prices, they try to make their platinum more scarce until the price goes back up. And analyst Jeffrey Christian says there are even more supply problems. The world's largest platinum producer is South Africa.
There are any number of things that are constraining South African production. You have had several years of problems with electricity cutbacks, work stoppages for safety reasons, governmental problems.
And that can mean even more shortages and even higher prices. But there's one platinum customer who keeps buying regardless of price.
If you want to get married, you'll come up with the ring.
Rosa Malikandov works at a jewelry store in New York City's Diamond District.
It's the finest metal that everybody's requesting. Even though it's costing more money, they still want platinum.
In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by PBS, this week presenting the story of one man's journey to awakening, The Buddha, premiering tonight at 8, 7 Central, only on PBS. By Citrix, offering Go to My PC, providing remote access to a Mac or a PC from anywhere. More at gotomypc.com/market. And by Putnam Investments, helping investors save for retirement since 1937. For the latest retirement news, you can talk to your advisor, then visit RothIRAblog.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
And this final notes, well, let's see. We've had stories today on how expensive it's getting to live, which explains plunging tax assessments and consumers struggling to spend. So if we're not out shopping, we must be home doing something. But now we know something we're not doing, having babies. The Pew Research Center just finished analyzing state fertility and economic data, and birth rates, which had been rising steadily to their highest level in two decades until just a couple of years ago, began to decline in 2008, apparently right along with the economy. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow lost 72 points, two-thirds of 1%. The Nasdaq dropped 5 points, about 0.25%. The S&P 500 fell 6 points, more than 0.5%. Bahan Baladuni, Robbie Carman, Stephen Colon, Andrea Jackson-Gerwitz, Eric Johnson, Jeff Peters, and Charlton Thorpe engineer the program for us. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. And next time on this program, Brits that are out of the military and now out of a job.
I'm not the only one. Lots of friends of mine are in this position, and we just can't find work. We're struggling.
I'm Bob Moon. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.